7:08 in the morning here on Upfront. I'm Kat Brooks. Brian Edwards Tekert is in New York. We're going to talk to him in just a moment. Good morning, Mitch Jesner.
Good morning, Kat Brooks.
So it's not Mondays with Mitch today.
No, I was bumped, but yet, oddly, here I am.
It's Mondays with Brian.
Wow. Good.
you're doing all right, though,
uh-huh.
Right? Right?
You know, I'm okay. Sure.
We are the first part of today's show. We are going to focus on climate. Thousands of young people, millions of people, took to the streets on Friday for the climate strike. And the following day, there was a UN Youth Summit, and the United Nations Climate Summit kicks off this morning. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Kat. I'm standing by here in the media hall at the United Nations building in New York, monitoring a closed-circuit feed from the United Nations General Assembly floor, where the people who will be convening the Climate Action Summit high-level talks have just told everyone to take their seats. Expecting opening remarks shortly from Secretary General Antonio Guterres, and we believe he will be in dialogue with Greta Thunberg, the Swedish teenager who started a climate strike of one outside her country's parliament a little over 1 year ago, and is responsible for getting about 4 million people into the streets last Friday.
Brian, what's the energy like there in the UN? How many people are you looking at?
Well, I'm in a really crowded media hall, just kind of mobbed by every country's media delegations. You know, a lot of people come out here to cover General Assembly Week at the United Nations, which for many countries' leaders is their, like, one and only chance to take a photo with the UN Secretary General or someone who might raise their profile, like Donald Trump, who has been posing with Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. I have to say it's an interesting contrast between these talks, which are very politic and have a million ways of countries' representatives talking around what they're actually saying, which is generally some version of we're not prepared to do enough to rein in severe climate change. And the students, the young people who kind of come here with a no BS attitude. On Saturday, there was the first ever United Nations Youth Climate Summit, where youth leaders from around the world were credentialed to come here. But the UN was largely, there was a conspicuous absence of adults in any position of power listening to them. So here's some of the opening remarks from Bruno Rodriguez, who is one of the youth delegates from Argentina.
The scientific community was very clear. We are facing an existential emergency. And our world leaders have the obligation to make radical change. But change rarely takes place from the top down. It happens when millions of people demand change. I speak on behalf of the organized Youth for Climate Students Movement of Argentina. Our movement understands that the power will see nothing without struggle.
That's a loose paraphrase of a Frederick Douglass quote.
Yes.
Power concedes nothing without a demand. And, you know, I was just like kind of eavesdropping on these young people, many of whom were traveling outside their countries for the first time, meeting in the corridors of the United Nations. And on their way out, I heard a young woman in one pack of people saying, you know, it's great that they brought us all together, but where are the people who run this place? So we're going to see what kind of tone gets set by the opening remarks by Greta Thunberg, who has a reputation for being extraordinarily blunt with world leaders.
That kind of goes to my next question, though, Brian. I mean, millions of people took the streets on Friday. Young people are making lots of demands. Did any platform or organizing plan come out of the UN Youth Summit?
No, I think it's probably better to look at that as kind of a networking event, solidifying, you know, the lines of solidarity that made it possible for 4 million people to participate in a coordinated strike on Friday. It wasn't really set up as a, you know, decision-making forum, and no one there really had been on behalf of a greater constituency. But it does kind of set the tone going into the talks. And it's interesting to see it set by young people as opposed to low-level diplomats, business lobbyists, and NGO representatives, which is how these things typically go. I got to say, in the preliminary sessions, which happened yesterday, the very...
Uh-oh. Ryan Edwards.
Scientific advisory group, which is basically there to brief all the powers that be on how bad the situation is. And here is the scientific advisory group's co-chair, Lena Srivastava.
We have a lost decade. We have a lost decade because there has been not the action that we said we were going to do. Essentially, as we all know, we're heading towards a 3.5 degree temperature.
So when she's talking about a lost decade, what she means is that about 10 years ago, scientific bodies associated with the United Nations Environment Project, started tracking what they call the emissions gap. They draw one line on a chart, which is like how much greenhouse gas pollutions they expect the world to release over time if it does nothing. That's pointed up. They draw another line pointed down, which is what the emissions have to look like if the world's going to meet the targets of these talks, which is aspirationally capping greenhouse gas, capping global warming at 1.5 degrees centigrade, with a hard limit at 2 degrees centigrade. Basically, what they're saying is in the 10 years since they started tracking those numbers, it looks like the business as usual line. What they were saying 10 years ago emissions would look like if nobody did anything.
Brian, can you talk more about what we are expecting from the UN meeting this week? How much of it is dedicated
to... The state of international climate governance is they run a giant pledge drive, where they ask each country to come to the table with the best of things it can do to limit emissions. This is the basic framework of the Paris Accord. Nothing is legally binding. The most important thing it does is set up a structure for monitoring how much pollution is coming out of each country, and a structure for every 5 years revisiting the goals the countries have put forward. Right now, the amount of pledges on the table from when the Paris Agreement was agreed to 5 years ago, according to the latest assessment from the scientists here at the United Nations, those pollution reduction goals would have to be multiplied by a factor of 5 to hit that 1.5 degrees Celsius target. That is to avoid kind of some of the worst tipping point thresholds of climate change. Basically, what Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the UN, has been doing, using the summit to do, is try to get countries to start, who are big polluters, to start announcing more ambitious targets in the run-up to the deadline for everybody to revise their targets next year in 2020. China is expected to bring a big package to the table. It's interesting. They had been seeing massively increasing pollution in recent years. They became the world's largest releaser of greenhouse gas emissions in this century, eclipsing the United States. But they've been building renewables at such a pace that they look like they may actually level off and peak their greenhouse gas emissions ahead of schedule. On the other hand, China is financing the construction of coal-fired power plants in other parts of the world as part of its One Belt, One Road initiative, which is an extraordinary contradiction that actually these talks are not really set up to resolve.
What's the role of the United States in these talks?
I mean, it's totally absent. Actually, for the very first time ever, they have decided to bar countries from having time at the climate summit who are not increasing the ambition of their climate targets. That takes the United States and about 100 other countries off the board. So neither Donald Trump nor any of his representatives will have any space at the dais today, which is probably the closest thing the United Nations has to, like, power to actually punish a country for being a bad actor. The issue is the United Nations Climate Summit, which is only today, is meant to kind of build momentum going into the General Assembly, which is meeting all week. Donald Trump will be speaking tomorrow. He's expected to throw some rhetorical bombs at Iran over the attacks on Saudi oil installations last week. Iran's expected to respond in kind from the dais at some point. And the focus may move on from any meaningful action on climate change very, very quickly when that happens.
Brian, there was a report released yesterday from some leading climate organizations. What are some of the highlights from that, and is any of that going to be addressed, you think, over the next few days?
So this is meant to kind of inform the negotiations. It's put together by a consortium of international climate groups. It's called United in Science. Basically, it's meant to synthesize the latest data, the latest findings, and put it into bullet points and charts that people who are not scientists can understand. Some of the most striking results from that: temperatures are now at about 2 degrees Fahrenheit higher than pre-industrial levels. That's 1.1 degrees Celsius. Sea level is rising at a faster rate than it ever has before. So it's not just rising, but the rate at which it's rising is going up. It's now at about 5 millimeters per year. And also the finding I mentioned before, that it would take quintupling the existing pollution reduction targets to rein in climate change, to try to cap it at about 1.5 degrees centigrade. A lot of really somber notes being struck by scientists, and we'll speak to one of them in our 7:30 segment today. They did point out there is still room to hit that target if the world acts aggressively now. And one of the kind of no-brainer moves that the world has not yet triggered is, like, stop building coal-fired power plants. There's enough coal-fired power plants in the world operating today that if they keep burning the coal over their lifetimes, they will push the world right up to the brink of that climate limit. If the ones that are under construction or planned to actually come online, they will blow right through it. And the thing with coal is, under a lot of circumstances, it's actually more expensive than renewable energy, but a lot of that is the capital costs of construction. Once you have built the power plant, it is very cheap to keep it operating and spewing climate warping emissions into the atmosphere. So the target of the scientists and a target of a lot of the activism is stopping the plants before they get built.
We were hoping that Greta Thunberg was going to go live. Any indication that she is going to be speaking soon?
Well, it looks like Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General of the United Nations, is just now giving the opening remarks on the summit, and he's expected to introduce her. He's just scheduled in the agenda to have a dialogue with the youth leader. The youth leader is unspecified. On Saturday, she dropped that was going to be her in the course of passing the mic to the young person from Argentina who I just played tape from a couple of minutes ago. So it looks like she will be taking the dais in a minute or two.
I was listening to young people over the weekend, many of whom participated in the climate
good move
strike in San Francisco. And there was a lot of, yeah, it was a great protest, but I don't have any faith that anything is actually going to happen. You were in the streets with thousands of young people on Friday. What was the tone and tenor that you were hearing?
It was really striking. You know what? I'll tell you, it was definitely the most diverse mass environmental mobilization I have ever seen. Now, partly that's because it's New York, and partly it's because New York's public school system gave its roughly 1.1 million students permission to miss class without penalty if they attended the strike. But I also think it speaks to a generational shift. This is something that preys on the minds of young people across class lines, across race lines, and it's something they want to do something about. A lot of the young people I spoke to, and I'm talking about kids as young as 10, talked about what they were learning in class about climate change. They were clearly emotionally affected about what that meant for the future of the planet that they're going to live on. And as is the wont of young people all the world over, they sounded remarkably hopeful about their capacity to change things. And what we're starting to see in polling in the United States is that climate has moved from an issue that people care about in the abstract, but don't prioritize when they're deciding who to vote for, to one that in a growing portion of Americans will actually base their votes on. And that gives activists like the Sunrise Movement, which is pursuing a kind of inside-outside strategy, both direct action and electoral campaigns to build a coalition for climate regulation in the U.S. government. It gives them a lot more room to maneuver, because suddenly the positions that politicians are taking, the actions they're taking or not taking on climate change, can have consequences for them. And it looks like the charge to impose consequences is going to be led by the young people, not the wonky environmental groups that have been hammering away at these issues for three decades and not getting anywhere terribly fast.
Brian, you've already said that the United States is not participating in talks at the meetings this week concerning climate change. We've seen in previous international meetings concerning the climate, the United States or even other actors trying to even undermine talks. Is that at all happening this week?
I'm sorry, Mitch, you broke up. I've got a lot of people competing for my bandwidth here. What did you ask?
I was just saying, as you indicated earlier, that the United States is not participating in this week's talks. But we've seen in the past the United States and other actors trying to undermine the talks. Is that happening this week at all?
We'll see. They're just starting off right now. I will see. It's kind of surprising which countries are getting a lot of time at the dais. Qatar's playing a pretty prominent role, at least if you go by the agendas. They're the world's largest exporter of natural gas. China's probably going to get accolades for increasing its ambition on reducing climate warping emissions within its own borders. But as I said, there's been very little discussion of its role in financing them abroad under the One Belt, One Road initiative. It's not clear to me how much the extent to which this is a forum at which fossil fuel lobbies see much advantage in having influence. If they can kind of work on their national governments, keep them from getting more ambitious about climate solutions, that's fine. There is no legal authority coming out of the Paris Agreement that punishes countries with anything other than basically bad publicity. All right. It looks like right now from the United Nations General Assembly floor, they're going to a B-roll from the climate strike on Friday as an introduction to Greta Thunberg, who will be taking the dais momentarily. Greta Thunberg is the Swedish teenager at the age of 15. She started a one-person strike in front of the Swedish parliament. This was about 2 weeks before parliamentary elections there, and then continued it, staying away from school and going to strike outside the Swedish parliament every Friday since then. Pictures of her sitting kind of lonely on the sidewalk with her knees drawn up and her signs next to her went viral on social media and started encouraging other young people to participate and to duplicate what she was doing around the world. And that's exploded into a global climate strike movement that put about 4 million people in the streets. That's organizers' estimates as of this Friday. By their estimates, 250,000 of them here in New York. Now Greta Thunberg is 16 years old. She arrived in New York on a solar-powered sailboat because she has forsworn using aviation because of its climate-warping impacts. On this tour through the United States, she has already spoken in Congress. She spoke to the assembled 250,000 people at the climate talks, at the climate strike on Friday. Now she's taking the dais at the United Nations Climate Action Summit high-level talks that are kicking off today to address the assembled nations of the world. I'm going to bring up the stage feed. It looks like she's walking out right now. Oh, no, that's not her. That is somebody else introducing her. I don't know if we're going to get to Greta Thunberg before the headlines.
We've got 2.5 minutes, so hopefully we'll get a little taste of her. But while we're waiting for her, Brian, what sort of are you looking at covering over this next week? What can listeners expect when they tune in every day at 7:30 for your coverage, your climate coverage?
So today we're going to have a lot of the young voices from outside the summit of the climate strike and the young people who've been credentialed to be inside the United Nations talks. And I'm also going to speak to some of the scientists who've been preparing the latest data for the United Nations about basically the gap between what their work says the world needs to do and what's actually coming out of them. Okay. There's a panel a panel of youth speakers up on the stage of the United Nations World Summit, being introduced by a speaker there. So it looks like it won't be an address by Greta Thunberg, but she'll be part of the panel. Yeah, I think I'm going to record that, see what we can bring to you later in the day.
Okay.
You'll have my roundup of the week's activities after news headlines.
Brian Edwards-Tiekert, thank you so much for joining us. Looking forward to your coverage.
Thank you, Kat.
That was Brian Edwards-Tiekert, co-host of Upfront. He is at the UN Climate Summit happening in New York City. We will be bringing you that coverage every day this week at 7:34 in the morning. Mitch, are you going to have any of that on your show?
Well, probably, Kat. I think so. I think I'll go and plunder your folder and see what I could take. We could air at 10.
So at 7:30
glad you asked.
And 10 a.m. with Mitch Deserich on Letters and Politics. We're going to continue our climate coverage after the news headlines with Brian Edwards-Tiekert. Talking to young people at the climate strike, where 250,000 young people took the streets, as well as some coverage from the UN, the Youth UN Climate Summit that happened the very next day, that apparently no adults with any power-making authority thought worthy of attending.
I will put in one plug for my show at 10, since I'm here, and that is we will be diving into this whole controversy concerning Ukraine. It's a potential, still early, we don't know everything, but it's a political scandal that has the potential to bring down both Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
That's a big cliffhanger. I think everybody, including myself, should tune in at 10 a.m. to Letters and Politics.
2.5 hours. Now, it might also boost both of them, too. So it could go either way.
All right. Intense day here at KPFA. Come back after these news headlines.